Thanks, Rob. To download 720 WGN, I'm Justin Coffin. Well, this weekend, the world will watch a wedding. The royal wedding starring Prince Harry and his princess-to-be, Meghan Markle. British royals know how to do weddings. So much so that they usually are the most watched events on television. But what is it about these events that garner so much attention? Fred Weintraub joins me tonight. Fred, longtime Chicago journalist and longtime WGN contributor who splits his time between London, Chicago, and Houston. He covers the royal family. This is his time to shine to tell us all about the royals and why they continue to fascinate and capture the world's attention. Weintraub works for WCIU in Chicago as a contributor to the morning show The Jam, and he joins me tonight. Fred, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
So this, I mean, this really is your time to shine. You almost become a de facto representative of Royals culture to the city of Chicago. You're on different shows, you're in different areas. Do you like that role, being the Chicago's representative of the Royals?
I do. It's kind of, you know, it's a window of opportunity. I kind of live a three-part life in that I'm a broadcaster from Chicago. I have been general manager of a group of television stations. I've traveled a different path than probably most people. But I started out right out of college as a reporter, so my heart is always, just like whether you're a TV reporter or a radio reporter, no matter what you go into next, you're still a reporter at heart. And a reporter is a person who gathers information. I just happen to be a person who spends enough time in London that I can gather as much firsthand information as you can reasonably gather when you're covering the royals.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of people who are listening tonight are like, oh, great, I want to hear all about the royal wedding. And I'm going to take us down a different path because I want to know all about Fred. About 10 years ago, you moved to London. You say you want to get into covering the royals. How intimidating was that? I mean, you don't know the culture. You don't necessarily know how to cover a royal family. What did you think you were getting into?
So here's the long and short of it. I had this career, which has been a great career in Chicago. My wife, who works for a global oil company, came on one day and said, I have an opportunity in London. And I thought, being the good husband that I like to be, that if she had a 99% opportunity of having this happen to her, why wouldn't I be supportive? She has been supportive of all the craziness that goes on in broadcasting. Right, I thought that was the least I could do. So I worked out an arrangement with Weigel Broadcasting. And then off we were for the first time when we first went to London about 8 years ago. And I thought, okay, I've got to, you know, reporters don't just sit around and do nothing. And so while I'm there, I better figure something out. So, you know, I heard about the royal family like everybody else. I read all the stuff. I watched all the things. And I thought, I'm going to go check out my first royal event and just get a sense of what it was. And I can remember the first royal event was probably 8.5 years ago when Queen Elizabeth was going to participate in a service at St. Paul's Cathedral. And I must have been able to talk my way into the reporter's bullpen area, because no matter what anybody says about you're a royal correspondent, you're, you know, Chicago's royal watcher. I mean, there are 5,000 royal watchers in London, in the UK right now.
Wow.
Now, the truth is, the royal family sends out press releases. It's not like they're sitting down and doing, unless you're the Walter Cronkite of the BBC, they're not sitting down with Fred Weintraub or almost anybody else and dishing out information. So you have to put pieces of the puzzle together. But for the first part for me was figuring out, okay, is it like the president of the United States that I'm going to be so far away that I'm going to have no clue? I'm going to have to use binoculars to figure out where Queen Elizabeth is. And then I figured out that, no, if you could figure out where the beat reporters in London are, you can work your way in there. You figure out what events you're going to go to. So I started out with a big event, which at St. Paul's is pretty big. And I will tell you, while I am not starstruck anymore, not to say that it's not exciting to see the Queen of England when she comes out of whatever event she's coming out of.
Yeah.
It's less starstruckness for me at this point and more of a respect of how she's turned this stodgy, historic, we never break a, you know, we have certain rules that never get broken. And then all of a sudden you see over a 10-year period of time that the rules are broken. you have a new respect when for what she's doing.
When you started and you started to work, I mean, I was reading today that you kind of had in your head that, okay, well, this is the UK Kardashians. This is the closest thing in America. It's going to be pop culture. It's going to be the E channel. But it's nothing like that. Explain that to us, because I still think in my head, yeah, this is pop culture, you know, not to disrespect it, but pop culture trash. This is just people, you know, like for the tabloids and for the E! Channel and for everything in between, but it's for that. But it's much more to you.
It is much more. And you'll have those royalists who believe that. You'll also have the haters who think it's ridiculous. I'm never going to watch anything royal. But when you take a deeper look at it and you try, in my case, the kid from Chicago who could be somewhat objective, because I knew nothing.
Right.
I knew nothing about this except what I learned in history. And you start looking at the official schedule and you start seeing that Prince Charles and Princess Anne, his sister, and the Queen and Prince Philip, that they're doing anywhere between 400 and 600 engagements a year. That's like three engagements a day without taking too much time off. So you'll read in People magazine about the vacations that they might have gone on. You won't read about that with the Queen, but you'll read about that with William and with Harry. But you don't see the other side of the life that they have of service, which the Queen started. And remember, not only is it service in showing up to these chicken dinners, but everything equates their patronages, their charities that they are responsible for, it all equates to money and it all equates to millions of pounds. So when they're involved in a particular charity, there's money that gets attached to that. They're raising money.
It's a life of service. So to hear you say it, that's really what, if you're in the royal family, it obviously comes with, you know, royalness, if you will, but it's a life of service.
So it started with the king, with the queen. I think it was fairly traumatic that her uncle abdicated. Her father, King George, got thrown into being king. Probably the combination of cigarettes and the World War ended his life at 56, and she found out at a very, very young age, in your 20s, I'm going to be the queen. So she went. She goes to the coronation, as you would expect her to do, the official start of her reign, and she takes an oath in front of God in her eyes that the most important thing in the world is what she has to do to fulfill her obligations of duty to the UK. And she's lived her life that way, above family, above anything else.
Wow.
And for doing that for, you know, she's been on the throne for 65, 66 years. That's not, you know, that's not some minor commitment. And you, when you think of Prince Charles, and he will say, not in a complaining way, he'll say, what people can criticize, but what they don't realize is because of my commitment, I know exactly what I'm going to be doing for the next 3 years every single day. I don't think you and I would like a life that we knew exactly what we had to be doing every day.
Fred Weintraub is here. We're talking about the royal wedding, which is this weekend, and really about the royals as Fred covers them. He lives in Chicago and Houston and in London, and he's really become a royal correspondent for the city of Chicago. All right, Fred, we'll take a break here. We'll come back, and let's talk about this royal wedding. Why does this one differ than the others before it? Fred Weintraub on The Download. Stay with us. Fred Weintraub's here. We're talking about the royal wedding this weekend. Prince Harry, Meghan Markle. That's the extent of which I know, Fred. I just threw it all out there. I got nothing else to add. You know, it is interesting as you talk about the royal family and what we may not know about them sitting here in Chicago and only really paying attention to the pop culture value. You think about the kids, and this wedding in particular is one that is very unique, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Why?
It's unique because, first of all, he's probably the most popular of all the royals. He's marrying a woman who's divorced. He's marrying a woman who is biracial. He's marrying a woman who's had her own career. Those are all things that the royal family is not used to. And so the queen, the way, you know, we did a story on the jam yesterday. We taped a story on the jam yesterday talking about how important is afternoon tea. And I said to my colleagues, it's really important because on October 17th, Meghan and Harry went to Buckingham Palace in a darkened car with windows blackened out so no one would see them. And they squeaked in as tight to the Queen's entrance to Buckingham Palace as they could. So even some of the senior staff did not know that they were in the building. They were going upstairs to have tea with Queen Elizabeth. And what Harry was really doing was asking permission to marry Meghan. If the Queen was having a bad day, if the Queen said, no, you're not going to do that, if any of those things were in place, this royal wedding would not have happened.
Well, you would just look back at the royal history and you would assume that there would be a lot of question to all of the things that are firsts, meaning, you know, they want streamlined, they want it a certain way. That's just, you know, when you talk about royals and what the expectations are. So what is it about Queen Elizabeth where she's cool with all these things being a first? And we see this not only with Prince Harry, but we see it with Prince William as well. There seems to be a changing of the guards. See what I did there? in how the royals are perceiving themselves.
Because at nine, she's made some mistakes along the way, as anyone would. One of the mistakes being when Harry and William's mother, Princess Diana, was killed, it was perceived in the UK that the Queen was not overly sympathetic. She stayed at Balmoral, where the boys were. She did not come to London straight away. Now, her reason for it, which sounds logical and is probably true, is because she wanted to protect her two grandsons. And she thought the way to protect them was to keep them there, in the spotlight of London. It kind of backfired. It probably backfired that the royal family did not give Diana the attention that she needed to learn to become a proper royal. You know, to get the 101 tutorial. That didn't happen with Kate. That's not happening with Meghan. When the press crosses over the line with Kate when they were first going out, and now when the press has crossed over the line first with Meghan and now with Meghan and her dad, Harry comes out in a formal way, either by sending a letter or probably by sending a letter saying, you know what, you need to back up. Give the person I love some degree of respect.
What's the relationship like? What's the relationship with the royals and the press? Because it seems like if you look at the American press and what's considered our royalty, which is political, it's not good. So what is the relationship with the royals? Have they figured out a way that they coexist?
Yeah, I think that I think in some ways they figured out a way to better coexist versus the political climate in America where there's not very much coexistence. Because Queen Elizabeth at 92 was hip enough to know, I got to figure out how to make the monarchy survive, which means making William survive, making Harry survive. So she became more open. The reason this wedding is so important is because you are seeing, and it was in the Wall Street Journal today, that you're seeing the new age of royalness with Harry and Meghan being allowed to break all the rules. They don't want gifts for their wedding. They want to include their charities. Meghan will probably give a speech at one of the parties on a Saturday night. That was unheard of before. All kind, you know, minor things to major things. William and Harry are now talking about mental illness, as is Kate, and they're forming this group that will be, in addition to their love of animals and conservation in Africa, mental health is a huge issue for them, in part because they were so crushed by the death of their mother. They both have come out over the last year and said, we kept it all pent in. We never told anybody that how hurtful it was and how painful it was. And that's not the way you become mentally healthy. And by Harry coming out and saying, I had to go see a counselor. Well, no royal would ever admit that they had to go see a counselor like a regular person who has a trauma in their life and decides I better deal with this trauma. It was the first time that he came out and did something like that.
Now, you're seeing both with Prince William and Prince Harry, a changing of the guard, if you will, like I said. But you know, they're in line, or at least William is. He's in line for, or, you know, Prince Charles would be the next king, but he's 70 years old, so that, you know, William would be the next in line. It's one thing as princes to be chilling out and hanging out with Kanye and having fun and living life and changing the way the royal family is, but when they move up the ladder and they get to more levels of formality and importance in the monarch, will that change? I mean, they're going to get more formal. They're going to get more, you know, big boy tie.
I think that they will. I think that William will definitely, when he has an opportunity, become king. But you got to remember, you know, Charles will probably be king. He won't be as king as long as Elizabeth was queen. But he wants to serve in part so he gives William an opportunity to have a life before he becomes king. Will William, will Harry have to, will they be less out there? Probably, but it won't be hoity-toity, we can't say anything. They are clearly the future. Mm. Whether they talk about mental illness or any of those kinds of things, they're doing it because they saw their mother doing it. They know if the monarchy is to survive, they better do those kind of things. They better figure out social media. They better figure out, how do we have a royal channel? Because we've got to communicate with people. We can't be, you know, 20 years ago, the queen would never go over and shake hands with people. Now, she'll go over and say hello to the people. That wouldn't happen 20 years ago.
All right, last thing. What should we be, for me, I'm going to watch on Sunday. What do I got to be looking for? What is the one thing that I should be looking for in a wedding, a royal wedding, that is interesting, unique, and royal?
Well, I mean, nobody does pomp better than the British. So you will see some military types of thing. But this is really a family wedding. It is not a state affair. But you will see two people that I think are really in love with each other, that are bringing their friends and their family together. The surprise that you will see, other than the stuff like what dresses she's wearing and all that kind of stuff, is the thing that could steal the show for both of them is the Prince and Princess of Cuteness, which is Prince George, 5 years old, and Princess Charlotte. If Charlotte turns around and waves to the camera, Meghan's going to have less than a fantastic day, because the cuteness factor is going to come out.
Oh, Lord. Fred Weintraub is in studio. He works for WCIU. He's a contributor to the morning show, The Jam. He also covers the royals. He's sort of our royalty correspondent here in the city of Chicago. Fred, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flam.
Wednesday night.
That's right. It's time for the Swap Meet, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. 312-981-7200. Greg Flam is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. He joins us every Wednesday night so we can find out if your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk is worth anything.
Yep.
Usually it is. I was surprised.
Yep.
Usually you'll have something that's like the coolest thing in the world, and you'll be like, it's
$5. $5, yep.
And then you'll be like, I've got this piece of plastic, and you're like, that's a $250 piece of plastic. Right. That's just how it works.
That's why we're here.
That's right. 312-981-7200. Queue up now so we can get to it. Greg, good to see you, bud.
Good to be here.
So, you know, as we've been talking about all winter and into the spring, that when we get to this time of year, it's time to roll.
It's on.
It's game on. Game Wolf's time. Is open. Yep. Here we go. You've got the garage sales, estate sales. Are we seeing it popping?
It's going. I found a $6 pinball wizard belt buckle. Sold that for about $50 this week.
What?
So that was cool. And that was at Rosemont at Wolf's there. So that was good. And finding all kinds of stuff there. And I just advise people, if they want to find the really good stuff, get there early to, you know, Wolf. So you can get there as early as 2 a.m. If you want to shop with a flashlight, you can get there. But, I try to do 5:36 in the morning, and I'm finding good stuff.
That's so. What you're rolling in? You're rolling Wolf's at 5:30
in the morning? Yeah, about 5:40 I get there, yeah. So, and then, you know, I shop until about 7:30, and I go do my booth in Peloton at Wolf's. So it works out. I got to be up early anyway for that, so why not?
Hey, I'm not judging it being early.
We're
bird.
Not judging, right?
I just meant the stereotype of the picker is
it's
four in the afternoon. I think I'll go see what's going on. Not with Greg Flam.
It's like a golf center display.
Yeah, right.
Golfing
right.
at night.
Right. All right, so what did you bring in today?
Oh, bread and butter stuff. First off, 1978 Tomy Digital Derby Auto Raceway game.
Nice.
Now, I would play this thing, but it's so loud, and it's just amazing that this is what we would spend hours on playing.
What is it? Can you turn it
on? Yeah, so it goes like that, and then you got to steer, and then when you hit the other car, you get... Oh, I'll try to hit one now.
Yeah, you got to purposely hit one.
Yeah, so... And this is what we would spend hours on, and now it's like on a timer, so it's going to be noisy. I'll try to hide it. Anyway. And
it's good. That's called ambiance.
Right. There we go.
Yeah.
We'll go with that. The cool find was I found a set of five Doctor Who posters.
Ooh, nice.
And it was for a 1986 book release. I'm going to turn this thing off with the battery here. Isn't that funny? So he set up five Doctor Who posters, and it was for a book release in 1986, and very rare, so they could be worth about $50 each, so you're looking at about $250 here, and so that's cool.
That's awesome.
Yep, and then the funny thing I found was this Al Capone proprietor ashtray from the 70s, and
it's just big block.
I've heard of these. I've never been able to find one. It's not worth a lot, maybe $20, but it's Chicago history, so.
Yeah, essentially...
conversation.
A tchotchke piece. Right. A tourist piece of Al Capone.
Yep.
Because, of course, as we know, he was around in the 60s, not the 70s.
Right.
Did I get that right?
But yeah, but they got the ashtray out.
Did I get that right?
In the 60s, right? Yeah, right.
It was 65, I think. 65.
Now you're
going to
light them up. You're going to light up the phone.
Al Capone. I wasn't really paying attention to the Al Capone tour, but I think it was the late 60s. All right.
Be patient
around
on the phone call.
All right, 312-981-7200. We've got, again, so here's how we're going to play. We've got the calls and the texts that come in. If you have something that you have been holding on to, memorabilia, collectibles, Greg can tell you what it's worth, which is great. And then there's also the brag part of this, where I'll give you a Lou Malnati's pizza if you got the best brag of the night. If you can come through with something, you're like, I'm not necessarily ready to sell this, or I got this hanging on my wall, but guess what I got? I already know what it's worth. It's worth, it's priceless.
Right.
If you got one of those and you want to brag and you think you got the best, then you're going to get a free pizza. You get a free meal out of bragging about what's in your foyer, your foyer.
Yep. Bring it.
312-981-7200. It's a swap meet. Stay with us.